But really, we're just wanting to have this conversation together tonight. So, Sophie, just starting with you, just say a little bit about your story, your journey. How did you become a Christian?
So I grew up in a very atheist household, deeply suspicious of religion in all its forms. So faith to me, I just had no concept of it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it, to be honest with you. But in my late teens, I was just very lost. I didn't really know who I was, I think. And I developed quite a bad eating disorder. But took myself up to university and did all the things that you do at university to try and find yourself. So lots of parties, lots of bad relationships with guys, trying to just work out who I was, really. And then I ended up getting a job in the music industry as well. And things just escalated when I moved to London. I ended up in crippling debt, binge drinking most nights, got into drugs, and I ended up in AA when I was 23. But at my job at Universal, I had a friend, and he just really took an interest in who I was. And I think at the time I had lots of like transactional friendships with people who just wanted to go out with me and have some fun. But they didn't really know who I was, and he just took the time to talk to me. And he invited me to church, and I was like, no, thank you. thanks, though. So instead, he invited me to barbecues. So I went to those, and I met lots of other Christians at these barbecues. And I think it just confronted me with my like preconceptions about Christians. It's actually quite cool. Like, they were quite nice people, and I was like, oh, okay. And then they invited me to church, and I decided to go. And I didn't enjoy it, to be honest with you. I felt quite uncomfortable for the first half an hour. But at the end, a guy came up on stage who was like really tall, tattoos everywhere, like just looked like a bit of a thug. And he just told his story. He told us his testimony. And his struggles were exactly the same as mine, just trying to find a sense of fulfillment and identity in things like alcohol and partying and drugs. And then, like, God just spoke to me in that moment, and I just thought, if God can love this guy and help him, then I really think that he could probably help me too. And that was 7 years ago when I was 24, 25. So I've been walking with him ever since.
Yes. Amazing. Thank you so much. And and Sophie, what are some of the ways that you've encountered God's generous love, even as you've walked through some of those challenges?
So I really related to the woman with the issue of blood, sort of a woman who had a really, really deep sense of shame. And it says in that story that she went to all of these doctors to try and fix herself, and she spent all that she had. And instead of getting better, she grew worse. And I just really relate to that. Like, even, you know, before as a Christian, all these things that I was doing were ways to try and hide my shame or cover my shame in some kind of way. But Jesus sort of says, like, I didn't come for the sick. I didn't come for those that got it all together. Like, I came for the sick, like the sick people that need a physician. And I think that gave me comfort to know that, like, Jesus came for me. Like, he came for my messy self. So that helped me feel like I belonged with him. But I think one of the biggest ways that God's really shown his generous love to me is through his people. And I think when I first became a Christian, naively, you know, I just got really stuck into church. Like, I did everything. I did the serving, I did the praying, like, I was helping at a small group. I did everything well at church. But on the side, I was still struggling with all these things, all these addictions. Like, you don't become a Christian and it's like, oh, great, I'm good now. It's like, they're still very much there. So I had this sort of dual personality life where on a Sunday I was at church doing all the good stuff, and then in my private life I was still getting really drunk, still taking drugs, still having relationships with guys that I shouldn't be doing. And it was a difficult time. And I've got one example of where God's people really helped me with that. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. I got a bit upset this morning. It's going to happen again. There was an event at HTB Queensgate for 20s. And it was the same night as an album launch. And I was like, I'm going to the album launch. And I went, and there was like all this free alcohol, and I just got absolutely plastered. I got really, really, really drunk. But about 7 or 8 o'clock, it's not even that late, I just really felt like I had to go to this church event, like I had to go. So I took myself off and arrived, and I came in, and it was like so obvious that I was drunk. Like, it was so obvious. Like, I stumbled in, I think I fell over at one point. And people just came to me, like, they came to me. And just came round me, and people I didn't know as well, like it was my friends, but also people I didn't know, it's like they could spot the hurt. And they, you know, they come outside with me when I was having a cigarette, and they came back in with me, and you know, I don't really remember much of it really. But I remember at the end of the night, like at the end of these events, you want to just like go home, like it's wrapped up, it's finished. And I didn't want to go home, I was like, I'm not going home, I'm going up to the altar, I'm going to worship, I'm going to sing. And they were like, right, fine, off we go then. So they came up to the altar with me, and they started worshipping with me for ages, ages and ages. And then they got me home and then got me in the Uber. And the next morning I woke up and I had this really familiar, sickening sense of shame. Like I'd been exposed. Like I couldn't live this double life anymore. They'd seen all this mess and I wasn't going to belong anymore. And I woke up and I had all these texts from people who I knew, but also people I didn't know, saying, oh, it was so good to see you. Like, I'm so glad you came. And that just reminds me of the woman caught in the act of adultery. Like, she was so exposed in her mess. And it could be so easy for the enemy to get into those moments and be like, you do not belong. Look at you. Like, you're a mess. You say you're a Christian, and look at you. But the people that God put in my life challenged those lies and instead showed me the grace of God just through being happy to see me and how Jesus is with that woman. He gets down at her level and he's like, daughter, you belong, be at peace, be free from your suffering, like you're not condemned. And it was God's people that showed me that again and again. And it was a turning point for my healing, because then I was like, it's a safe place for me to bring this mess. I can bring it out into the light now. And people can help me, like, deal with it. And Jesus can get to the things that are in the light there. And, that's been consistently my experience with people. Yeah.
Sophie, thank you. Thank you so much. Jessica, let me just come to you. Just share some of your own story over the last few years.
Yeah, so slightly differently, I can't really remember a time that I wasn't a Christian. I don't think it meant the same thing when I was younger. I don't think I knew relationally exactly the same, but I always believed it was true, and I always felt like that. And I'd say, generally in life, like, had a pretty like comfortable life, so didn't have, obviously there were challenges, but I think all very manageable. And then maybe like a year ago, roughly, I got made redundant, which happens to a lot of people, but it was quite a shock. And I was at the time in the middle of, I was having like 6 rounds of treatment, something else in the middle of it. And I remember being like, oh, this feels like a bit of a hard time for this, but I'm sure it'll be fine. And similarly in the music industry, which is notoriously fickle, but I think I'd just gone in there like the person I was. So I just thought, everyone's very real. Everyone's exactly like me and it'll be fine. So I had that, and then in the summer, so that was like in spring, in the summer, me and my boyfriend broke up, and I thought, oh, this is really getting a bit tough now, because I think work is very distracting, and equally, I remember leaving work and thinking, oh, it's fine, because at least like this part of my life is very happy and content and bobbing along. And also last year, my dad got sick, and I'd felt wobbly the whole time, but I think it really started to get a bit more than wobbly. And the people in the music industry, like the same people, I do still have friends there, but a lot of them disappeared. Like without, especially, I'd been at a major label, whereas now I'm independent, and a lot of the people that are very good friends were around you at the time kind of disappear when you don't have the same kind of thing. And I remember the week before that had happened, being really challenged just out of the blue in church about how much of my identity was in like other places. And I really felt like that was it, smacking me in the face of a real wake-up call about putting too much into your job. And so I don't know if everyone has heard the analogy of like your life being like a stool, and someone had said it to me, and it's kind of you have these four stool legs of like friends and family, work, your health, your love life, and you can lose one kind of leg or even two and you're still kind of okay, but when it gets to three or more, it starts to get a bit wobbly. And I really started to feel that. I started to think, I'm generally someone of quite a happy disposition. I was waking up feeling really melancholy every morning and going to bed in the same place. And it was so draining. And I remember thinking, like, each new day I would wake up and I was like, I still feel the same. Like, I still feel like this. And in that time, I was still coming to church and doing everything. And I think at first maybe it was also a bit of routine, but I remember the Sunday of the week that my relationship had broken up, I thought, I'm just going to go to church because I can cry there. And I thought, hopefully Ben will play Reckless Love. Everyone will cry. And no one will even know that my crying is any different. Ben didn't play Reckless Love, where he is, but I cried anyway. But I remember thinking, innately, I was like, it's safe there. I can go there and be messy and my feelings can come out and it will be fine. And I remember going there one week and thinking, or coming here one week and thinking, praying on the way here, I just really, what I'd been missing was that feeling of peace. And it was also rocking me thinking, I should have that peace anyway. Like, I know the truth, I know about God, why am I not feeling it inside? I remember praying on the way here, and then I was sat in the service, and at the end of the service, as with every week, you said the blessing, and just the words of the blessing really hitting me, about like God shining upon me and turning his face towards me, giving me his peace. I just started praying that every single day and really like leaning into those words and praying that it would feel real again for me. And so I think that was such a helpful time. I knew even when I didn't feel like it was changing inside, I thought if I just meditate on this, if I just come here, if I'm just with these people, at some point the tide will turn and I will feel more like myself again.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing really vulnerably. Just say a little bit about what made you make that decision to stay in church. A lot of people would be tempted, having gone through all those different things, some of the legs of the stool kind of feeling more vulnerable, but you stuck with it. Why did you do that?
I think similarly to Sophie, it's about the people and the community. And I remember when I first came to St. Mark's, and it was an Alpha weekend away, and I prayed for fellowship there. And since that point, I've really felt that here. And I think, of course, you can have real meaningful relationships outside of church. There are so many brilliant people that are not Christian, but I think that has to be the difference here. It has to be real. And it has to be, it goes below the surface. So I think it was all the relationships with people at church and feeling like, you know, a few weeks, months into after the job or the relationship or anything, they're still asking how you are. They're still asking if they can pray for you, coming alongside you in a very real way, not performative, but it felt incredibly real. And you don't feel like you're in it alone. And I think in personal time, obviously meditating on the word and coming to worship and doing all those things, but I think it's the relationships with people that you feel like are real and true, and they really care about your answer, about how you are, and care about your future and you feeling better. And I think that carries you in a way of it being God's hands and feet on earth that other friendships don't, in my experience. Yeah.
Jessica, thank you. Chris, just coming to your... You're in full-time ministry. You're still in full-time ministry. How long have you been in full-time ministry for? How many years have you been ordained?
70-something.
Before working at Lambeth Palace, I know you were leading a church in Reading. You're obviously not immune to challenges and difficulties, but what's kept you carrying on, trusting in Jesus, worshipping, praying, turning up, serving?
I think we've had a hard year of it, our family. If I'd have sat here this time last year and someone had told me the things that we would have gone through this year, I don't think I'd have believed you. I think on the scale, and I'm sure there are other people who've gone through like degrees of difficulty far harder. But in the end of July, Belinda's brother, their son was diagnosed with cancer. And this family, their first child died 13 years ago. So they'd lost a son 13 years ago in a freak accident. And so when Jack was diagnosed with this cancer, and like I couldn't quite comprehend how this could happen again. And so we prayed, and loads of people here prayed, and we're really grateful for that. And I, you know, I gave the Lord every reason to heal Jack, I felt. I remember walking up the embankment at 2 o'clock in the morning, almost shouting, saying, look, if you do this, then these people might come to faith, and these people will come to faith, and then you've got this life, and it'd be such a testimony to you. As if the Lord needed my advice on what he did. I'm quite good as an advisor on the Lord at some time. But Jack died. Jack died at the end of November. And it is really true to say that we have known Jesus Christ to be present with us in an incomparable way. It is my testimony, both in my reading of Scripture and in my life, that as Psalm 35 says, God is close to the brokenhearted. That Jesus is a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. In fact, we're going into Holy Week and Easter, and where do we see the divinity of God most clearly? It's in his suffering. And so, Christ is one who comes to us as one who suffers for us, yes, but with us. And so, my sense is, and our sense was, that Christ is present incomparably in these times of greatest sorrow. And yet, on the one hand, that doesn't resolve the pain. And yet, on the other hand, that gives a context for this life and these things which are uniquely Christian. To be able to stand, I did Jack's funeral, and to be able to stand at the coffin of a 12-year-old and proclaim the resurrection of the dead without crossing my fingers, I believe more firmly in that than almost I believe in anything I can see or touch. That we do, we live with hope, with true and certain hope in the resurrection of the dead. And yet, whilst that gives, that gives us a perspective that we could never have without it. That it doesn't mean, it doesn't just lessen the sadness and the sorrow of now. In Romans 8, it makes it harder. The Spirit comes to us, we have this yearning in our hearts of what is going on in the world now, and what we long for the full revelation of the children of God, and it makes it harder for us. But we have that hope which is real and true and certain. And so that, I think that makes all the difference. And so then we, so where was Christ for Sophie? Where have friends met her that night in that pain and that suffering? Jesus continually calls us to be agents of his presence to one another in these times. And so that means sometimes that, so when Chris and Kate came for Christmas, they just like rock on the sofa every 10 minutes. Of course they did. Of course they did. And they said, oh, we're no company. And I'm like, of course you're no company. But this is what we do for one another, because this is where Christ is. We hold this disease, this uncomfortableness, there's much more fun places, I'm sure, but we do this for one another. We hold hope for one another. And this is what the body of Christ does. This is how I think we incarnate Jesus's life in our midst for one another.
Thank you. That's very powerful. With a group this size, there will be people walking through difficulties, challenges themselves, or certainly we all will all know somebody who's going through something. What would be your one encouragement to us, to leave with us, in terms of how we help others encounter the generous love of God, or we come alongside them with God's generous love, as you've been describing? What would that look like?
I think just very similar to what you said, like I think one of the biggest things that can happen when you are in the midst of suffering or a dark time is that God's character comes into question. And, you know, I think any story that you read in the Bible of Jesus' encounters with people in suffering is just that of compassion and presence. And I think the best thing that we can do as Christians trying to walk with someone else who is going through suffering is to embody compassion and presence. Like, you don't need the answers. Some of these are really challenging. Like, you can't have the answers, but you can be present and you can show who Jesus is through just being there. So I think that's probably the one thing I would say.
Jess, what about you?
Yeah, I think just don't underestimate how your behavior and your character can, often it comes up in people's testimony of why they believe in God, the way that Christians behave towards them when they're going through a tough time. And obviously in an ideal world, we would never want any of these things to happen to people, but when they do, it gives an opportunity for you to show up for them. And I think the way we show up as Christians has to be so distinctly different to come alongside people when they need it most, in the way they need it most. And I think that that's a real honor to be able to do that for other people. So just to do that with our whole heart, like the truth that we know, is incomparable, I think.
Thanks, Jess. I think in terms of that encouragement for us, how we posture ourselves, but Chris, just say a bit maybe personally for you, how have you found, maybe in your devotional life, what's that been like for finding God in those places of challenge?
So for me, Martin, that I can always be honest with God. So I write everything. I write loads of prayers down. And so for me, prayer became this time where I could just go, why, knowing that, you know, the tradition of the Psalms, as you said, you know, out of 150, 62 are Psalms of lament. And Psalms means praises. So like 62 are praises of lament. 42 are individual. The rest are corporate prayers of lament. And so, you know, our Christian faith is weight-bearing. It's weight-bearing for the pain that we go through. And so I found, you know, being able to write and give God things, I found Psalms incredibly helpful for me. They often gave me words I couldn't formulate myself. Silence was important. Tongues was really important when I didn't know what I was going to pray. And praise was really important as well. There's a great song from the States about 200 years ago called How Can I Keep From Singing? I think it's a Shaker song. Enya did something terrible to it about 20 years ago. But in it, there's this line, it's like, when the darkness gathers round, songs in the night he giveth. And so for me, there were songs that sometimes there were just melodies. It was the tune that resonated. It was the words. So I found, you know, prayer and praise to be incredibly weight-bearing. And I think that, you know, this is a huge gift. Not just we have, this isn't an internal, this isn't just for Christians gift. You know, anyone that we know who goes through a hard time, who if you say, would you mind if I prayed for you when I get home? Maybe not there and then necessarily, but like when I get, no one's ever said no. No one's ever said no. So like these, you know, this is, I think in our suffering and in our facing our suffering is almost our greatest witness, our greatest testimony to the faithfulness and the goodness of God.
Sophie, Jessica, Chris, thank you so much. Can we just show our appreciation?